Welcome to the Cognitive Rampage. I'm Adam Lowry. Today we are powered by SWATMMA.com. That's my friends Jeff and Julian at SWAT MMA Extreme and Fitness in Winter Garden, Florida.
My guest today, Johnny Rotten and Rosa Profeto. Now their story was aired on Oprah back in 1993, and they were both interviewed by Barbara Walters and more. It is an amazing story of heroism. There's a lot of beautiful things in this story, but let's just get to them. I'll let Johnny tell the story.
I was going to a boarding school in a small town in Pennsylvania called Pennsburg. I spent 2 years there. I came home and went to a private school as a day pupil, and it was called the Knox School. School of Hard Knocks, go figure. I completed my junior year, and then the summer between junior and senior year, I was working for an attorney and a senator. This was on in New York, Long Island, and I was a messenger running, bank statements, stuff like that, to various places. And on August 5th, 1993, approximately 12 in the afternoon, I have no recollection of this, but there was a 72-year-old man driving a 100-foot tractor-trailer, U.S. mail truck, and allegedly he was lost, pulled over on the shoulder for directions, got his directions, attempted to make a illegal U-turn, blocking four lanes of traffic, and I proceeded to crash under the trailer. They estimated it was about 75 miles an hour. Again, I have no recollection. And I had ruptured the gas tank in the car. The car was on fire. The impact was so great, my face actually hit the side of the trailer, and I shattered everything from here over. And car was on fire. And there was people, bystanders, a woman, Rosa Steppa. She's the second woman that gave me life. Obviously, only two. First was my mother, and then Rose. If it wasn't for Rose, I wouldn't be here. Wouldn't have my three beautiful children. So Rose ran over to the wreck and attempted to pull me out as everybody, bystanders, pulling her back, including an off-duty fireman. And she went back a second time and was able to get me out, and she then pulled me out, got me to the side of the road, and
she came back for you.
She went in once, the car erupted in flames. Okay, the crowd, including this off-duty fireman, pulled her away. She said, I can't let him burn. So she went back, got me out, and got me to the side of the road, and at that point the car exploded, the truck exploded.
What was the time between you pulling out?
Matter of seconds. I mean, obviously, when you talk to her, she'll be able to tell you more, because, like I said at the beginning of this, I don't remember anything. And we'll get to that when I began to start to realize what had happened.
So the fireman was just done with you. The fireman was just done with you.
The fireman wasn't doing anything. So other than trying to pull Rose back. And as it turns out, I was airlifted to a trauma center, and I was at a trauma center, and mom and her husband.
How long did it take them, though, to get you from there on to the?
I don't know those details. I mean, I imagine it'd be pretty quick. You know, hence why they airlift you.
Sure.
It was pretty serious stuff. Actually, backing up, when Rose pulled me out, and I have no recollection of this, she said that she got me to the side of the road. The car exploded, and I looked at her and said, "Oh shit, my mom's gonna kill me. She just bought me this truck," which. That's typical of something I would say, and, you know, here I've had this traumatic accident. I've, you know, broken every bone on the right side of my face. I've got a hole in my brain, and all I'm worried about is what mom's going to think, okay? You know, which is crazy, but, I mean, that's me, you know.
That's love.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So, mom actually was on the Circle Line tour with some relatives that were visiting from England, and they were touring around the Statue of Liberty on a boat. The senator I worked for, he called and ordered the Circle Line boat to be brought in immediately, and they would not do it. So mom got back to shore after getting all these pages, beeps, 911, 911, and got to a payphone, found out I was in a horrific car accident, and then got stuck in 2 hours worth of traffic.
So no, that's right, no cell phone.
No, in fact, this is pager beeper days, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you get a beep that says 911, you know, especially from, you know, your son's employer, you know, it's serious.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I couldn't imagine the state being a parent in that. Feeling so helpless, not being able to get to your kid, you know, when something like that happens. Because it won't matter how old you are ever. It's hard,
right.
You know, you're always a kid. I mean, having... You
well,
know,
until I had my own, I didn't even realize that, you know, that. Because, you know, I often, you know, worry and wonder the what ifs, what could happen. And you don't until you become a parent and know yourself, you know. So, I mean, that was torture for her.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So she finally made it to the hospital and... Rose showed up at the hospital as well as this off-duty fireman who then tried to take credit for pulling me from the car before it exploded.
Wait, back up. So now the fireman that said, let him burn, said, give me the medal, basically.
Right. Well, I mean, he didn't say that, but, you know, obviously he wasn't putting his life on the line as firemen
are
supposed to do. That's what they sign up for. Instead, there was a woman, an off-duty nurse that was, you know, maybe 120 pounds soaking wet, puts her life on the line and then decides that she's not going to let me burn, not the fireman.
Hmm.
So.
That is beautiful. You know, to hear something like that, I mean, it is 1993, but even to now, you know, I don't know, it gives me hope that, I don't know, Eric Rittenberg on the show, the last podcast, you know, he talked about a volunteer society, you know, this society or a community that, you know, volunteers and gives itself back, and he was definitely on a libertarian view, and there's points to that part I love. And so when I hear a story of that, you know, this 120-pound woman Rose, against fireman orders,
right,
goes to the fire and pulls someone out. You know,
put
maybe
her life on the line.
And pull someone out twice. It's not like a baby or
a nine-year-old.
Exactly.
It's
a grown man.
Right. That's stuck under this tractor trailer, pinned in his seat.
How were you, I mean, can you...
The steering wheel was bent down into my chest. I mean, I was deep under it. You know, I mean, it was bad. My seatbelt was on, and the first time she came to pull me out, she couldn't get me out. The crowd, including the firemen, mainly the firemen, pulled her back. When she came back the second time, my seatbelt was off, so I must have taken it off. Now, again, I've got no recollection. So, anyways, back to the hospital now.
Back. She comes back, the seatbelt's off.
And she pulls me out and gets me to the side of the road.
How did she get you unwedged?
I mean, that, again, we're going to leave that for Rose's part of the interview, because
yeah.
She could tell you in great detail, you know, more than I can, because, you know, I don't remember anything. And you know, obviously the brain... you know, block that kind of stuff as, you know, as
hopefully
a safety mode.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Oh my God. So you're waking up in the hospital with, how did you hear that the fireman was claiming responsibility?
Well, this was later on when I started to come around and realize what had happened.
How long?
There was definitely, you know, at least probably 2 to 3 weeks. I mean, I had major surgery, major brain surgery.
For 2 to 3 weeks? Are you in a coma?
No, I wasn't ever in a coma.
Okay.
I punctured a hole in the frontal lobe. I was losing brain fluid through my nose. They gave me 2 spinal taps to bring the brain fluid back down. Yeah, serious stuff.
Oh my God.
You know, there was, back in the day, there was a show. It was called, China Beach, and it was kind of like a modern day MASH. Mm-hmm. Right? I used to watch it. The head nurse, her name was Murphy, right? And it was just like one day I kind of started to, you know, every day everybody was telling me what had happened to me, and I couldn't communicate. My jaws were wired shut, so I could only write on paper. But I remember my first memory is, you know, waking up in hospital and, like, looking at this nurse and going, damn, man, am I in China Beach? Like, what, you know, because that looks like Murphy, you know, and, like, how'd I get here? And then, like, I wasn't able to communicate or talk or anything. And I at one point, and this is obviously all from the morphine and whatever else they had me on, I thought I fell asleep with candy in my mouth. You know, and that was why I couldn't open my mouth. You know, it took a while to finally understand what had happened and what was going on. You know, it was pretty traumatic stuff.
So, I mean, when did you know that, were you able to really come to and realize, you know, what may have happened, you know?
Well, as I said.
Grab your phone, man.
Yeah,
put that on quiet,
about that. Obviously, we're going live now. Everybody's probably hitting me up for questions.
Mm.
However, to that 2 to 3 week mark, you know, was when I started to have a realization. And after all the procedures were done and surgeries were done, they started to wean me off all the medications. Then I started to have an understanding of what was going on. And then I remember being faced one day with my mother asking me if I wanted to see what I looked like.
How far in between this was it?
What do you mean? At what point did that happen?
Right.
Obviously that's when I started to come around 2 or 3 weeks afterwards. And then I remember her, she brought a mirror, and showed me, and I was in disbelief on, you know, the swelling in my head, the fact that my eye was shut, and, you know, the first thing I said, you know, naturally was, is this, am I going to remain like this? Is this how it's going to be?
That was the first thought.
And at that point, you know, everybody around me was very hopeful, and I mean, the fact that I was still alive and kind of pushed towards, yeah, the cosmetics will be dealt with later, and we'll be able to get you back to where you were.
Were you feeling grateful just to be alive?
To be honest with you, you know, like, nobody's ever asked me that. You know, I do now. I absolutely do now. At that time, no, because, you know, it's kind of hard to when you're still trying to, you know, take in and comprehend everything you've just been through and only knowing it because of what everybody has told you. So I think probably the first time that maybe I felt that way and was grateful was I went and visited the wrecker yard where my burned car was. And I would not have believed it was mine. It was a Nissan Pathfinder. The roof was peeled off completely. But the only reason I knew it was mine was because there was the skeleton of some 15-inch subs from a Rockford Fosgate box that was in the back. So I knew it was mine. You know,
I mean,
it was
seeing that, I mean.
Oh, then it was a realization. I mean, even the man that brought us back to see it, you know, he's like, wow, you were in that? You survived? And, you know, yeah, I'm here. But again, you know, if Rose hadn't pulled me out, I wouldn't be here. I mean, it's crazy stuff, you know?
I'm glad you can speak so candid about that feeling, because I'm going to ask that question because I wonder, you know, being that in a life-threatening situation like that and coming out of it not knowing what to expect or what is, and being candid enough to say that, look, you know, I wasn't sure if I was grateful to be alive. You didn't know what was going to come of what had happened. I appreciate you being truthful and candid about, you know, about that feeling, you know, and putting yourself there.
Yeah, you know, and it took probably, you know, 2 years plus for me to convalesce completely from the accident. And, you know, the adjustments of dealing with working with the, I didn't lose the eye. I lost the use of the right eye. I believe the nerve that powers the eyelid was probably severed. And to this day, we don't know enough about the brain to try to repair something like that. But it was a big adjustment, you know, pouring something in the glass, you know, I missed the glass, and, you know, the depth perception was lost. And I remember probably, 10 years after the accident and not even thinking about this, and this was just a side effect of what had happened to me, I went to see Terminator 3 at IMAX with a bunch of friends, which was 3D. And everybody jumps out of their seat. And they're looking at me like, John, what the hell? You're not. And I'm like, what are you jumping out of your seat for? At that point, I realized that you need, as I call them, lamps, both lamps, okay, to see 3D. You know, and that was a side effect from the accident, something I never even had thought of, you know. Kind of made me a little bit sad because I couldn't share that experience of 3D. And, you know, I remembered what it was like, you know, but I'll never obviously get to see that again.
And how old were you?
When the accident happened?
No, when you noticed this.
The accident was 93, but when the Terminator happened, when did Terminator 3 come out? I don't know. Gosh, maybe 2000. So, I don't know. I was late 20s, something like that, you know?
Yeah, but at that young age, though, I mean, but that's something they don't tell you in the doctor's office, though.
No, right? Absolutely not. No, they don't. I mean, I've adapted in every other way. My peripheral vision, you know, is pretty darn good. I have a normal driver's license, and I've adapted, and every once in a while, if I'm in the shower, I might bump my head against the wall or something because I don't see it. But I cope. I can do everything that you can.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and especially, spin records better than most people I've seen.
Yeah.
That's conflict. Come on.
You're right, right,
yeah,
right.
That's
you
a
know.
Gift. But so, I mean, back there, what was it, a 2-year road to start to gain everything normal back?
I think that it's probably something that never really ends because you still, through your life, have to deal. I mean, like currently I'm having issues with my teeth due to a metal plate that they had put in my skull, which is now causing me teeth problems, you know, so many years later, 23 years later. So, you know, does it ever end? I don't know. But, I mean, we cope, we adapt, you know. I mean, I lost half of one sense and, you know, maybe other senses have gotten stronger because of that, so they say.
Which one?
Hearing.
Yeah. Oh, well, see, now it makes sense.
With hearing, music? Yeah, wow. Absolutely.
Man, I don't want to say there's no coincidences, but, I mean, have you ever thought about that? Any notion in life? You know, that about the coincidence of it, you know, or no coincidence of it.
Well, I mean, and I'll tell you something that I don't know, coincidence or not, but as far as accident, you know, the specific accident, what happened to me, you know, I don't know. I mean, some people say it was maybe to put a roadblock in my life. At the time I was young and, you know, I was destructive and I mean, just a normal teen doing stupid things, experimenting with stupid things and, you know, I don't really know why did that happen to me? You know, that's the big question.
Was that the first question?
That I thought?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, probably, yeah. Why did this happen to me? And then I said to myself, well, maybe I am here to do something, you know, for somebody, you know, or for many people. And I don't really know. And maybe I have done that. I mean, I have 3 beautiful children that wouldn't be here. But then they wouldn't be here and I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Rose. You know, and I'll tell you another story. When Rose had a husband, his name is Eddie. He was a New York City cop. And, now this is kind of crazy. When 9/11 happened, they called all the police to a rendezvous point to get in vans and head to the World Trade Center. So Rose's husband was on beat that day with his partner. Their car didn't start. So they messed under the hood with the car for 10 minutes, got it going, and then they arrived at the rendezvous point, and as they were pulling up there, a van had just pulled away and to head to the World Trade Center. All those officers had perished. So that meant if Eddie's car had started, he would have too. So I can't help but wonder and ask myself, you know, was his life spared because his wife spared mine? And I don't know the answer to that, and I never will, but...
What a connection.
I'm telling you. So
before the World Trade Center, his car's out front and dead, and he doesn't get to make it to the World Trade Center, is what you're saying.
Right. The van that headed to the World Trade Center, which he would have been on if his car had started when it was supposed to. Not supposed to. You know, this, how you look at it. It wasn't supposed to, obviously.
How long was this after Rose had saved your life?
Well, I mean, what was,
99?
Yeah, 99 was not, was that?
No, no, 03.
No, 01. 01. 2001. So yeah, so accident was 93.
Wow, so that many years later. And man, you connected, did Rose connect that?
I would imagine so. I mean, you know, it's, We fell out of contact in the past. We had talked about a lot of things. When my daughter was born, my first child, Jenna, I nominated, is that the right term, Rose to be, Jenna's godmother.
What is the word?
I don't know.
Is it a point? I mean, it's not a cabinet position. What do you do? Do you nominate? What do you do?
Commission?
Left field, I don't know.
Yeah.
So, but Rose, you know.
It's Jenna's godmother. And, you know, this is back still when I was living in New York. We were in a lot of, you know, contact on a regular basis. But we did fall out of contact for, several years. And then I hunted her down on Facebook, go figure, and finally reconnected with her. So, we now communicate, you know, once in a while, and her kids are all grown up, and obviously mine now too, and, you know, it's nice. I mean, she's, obviously I'll never forget her.
120-pound superhero.
No, that's it. That's it, man. Angel, I think is a good word. Angel. I mean, she put her life on the line for me, you know, and I mean, here again, going back to the firemen, and this is what they sign up for to do, you know, to risk their lives to save other people. And then he's trying to pull my angel away from the burning car. I mean, do you see the irony in that?
I love it. I love that the superhero vision we have is the, you know.
She's my superhero, absolutely, all day.
I mean, I can't wait
because, to because, you know, I mean, ask yourself, I mean, would you have the balls to do what Rose did, you know, if you were a passerby and witnessed this exact scenario? Well, I mean, it's tough to say until you're in the position.
Well, I'll tell you, we all say that, right? And there's a whole bunch of research out there about, like, if there's a whole bunch of people watching something and something is happening and no one does anything, no one will do nothing. But if one or two people do something, all of a sudden everyone will do something. It's a groupthink idea. But I will tell you that my wife and daughter and myself were coming home from Orlando. We had a volleyball camp up here. And we were pushing it through. We were coming down. It's about a four-hour ride back where we were living on Marco Island, Southwest Florida. And so it's about 4 hours, and we're driving home, and it's at night. And my daughter had just kind of fallen asleep in the back seat. My wife was pretty much in and out of it. And I've been watching this white car in front of me, lane to lane. You know, I'm like, oh, man, you kind of want to pass that guy. Before you could really think about anything, off the road he went, you know, from 75, swerves left, swerves right, smashes into the guardrail, spins the car around. Now my daughter and wife woke up, is kind of in the middle of that, because now I got to drive through this smoke.
Right.
You know, it was like that Days of Thunder movie,
you know,
when you just push through. And so we go through, and I pull over immediately, you know, and stop. And there's a group of cars, you know, around us. And myself stops, and one other truck on the right side of the highway was a U.S. Marine.
Mm-hmm.
And so the U.S. Marine stops, I stop, and now when you're doing 75, you got to stop. It's like a quarter mile, you know. So I kind of turn around, and I'm hoofing it back as fast as I can. I get back to the car, and I noticed a beam. They had just put in these new kind of guardrail things, and they were actually having issues and lawsuits to the state where these guardrails are actually shooting through like missiles through windows.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't learn this. My mom told me that a couple days later. But as I approached the car, I noticed a beam through the back window, directly through, and I'm like, you know, I don't know what it is. And I hear two little kids' voices in the back seat. I go to the left side, and I grabbed the one little boy, he's probably nine, and I can't even see the other passenger side of the car, right? I mean, I can't even see it. I'm like, I don't know. And it's a car seat, so I don't know what it's going to be. So I pull the kid out, walk him away from the road in the corner, set him down, go back to the other kid, and I don't know, you know, what it is, you know? And somehow the beam had pushed the car seat forward, right, and went through the passenger seat.
Wow.
So it's pushed the car seat forward through the passenger seat almost to the windshield, right? Now the dad is waking up and coming too, and he comes out, and the kid was fine. You know, got him out of the car seat, you know, kind of talking him down. They had been at a karate tournament, and, you know, dad was being super dad and, you know, wanted to get home, and he had just fallen asleep. And the Marine had ran back as well, but there were so many cars, the Marine couldn't play Frogger
to get across.
So, you know, but that idea of all those people watching.
Right, and not doing anything.
And firemen watching.
Right.
And was it just one fireman, or?
Yeah, it just was, well, obviously there was, the firemen would have showed up, you know, after being called for the accident.
So you had to be in there for some time.
Yeah, and you talk about, you know, you just made a statement about doing 75 and takes a minute to slow down. Well, picture, they estimated I was doing 75 and I just came to a dead stop with my face on the side of the trailer and everything just exploded. I mean, it was pretty crazy stuff.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God. But, and I gotta think, the accident happened. There's no fireman there, so what are you, a 6 minute response time? Two, three?
Yeah,
minutes?
Whatever it is. As a matter of fact, there was a nursery, business where the accident happened in front of, and that off duty fireman, okay, who tried to pull Rose away, he actually ran and grabbed the garden hose and was trying to put the fire out as if that was going to do anything to a ruptured gas tank, you know, as he's trying to pull Rose away, so.
I can see the bitterness. I would say at least he tried something.
Yeah.
But he tried to pull Rose away. That's hard to get over.
Well, that's it. I mean, and Rose will tell you herself. I mean, she said, you know, to quote Rose, she said, I can't just watch him burn.
That was what she said.
Yep. And then even, it was so bad. Like, my, you know, when I got out of the hospital, they gave me my clothes, what was left of them, you know, because they cut them off. My shoes, the bottom of my soles were completely melted
from the flames coming through the firewall.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, look, Steve, can we look up at all the, what's the temperature to melt rubber, the sole of a, just to wonder, I mean, what, 600-700 degrees?
I don't know that. I have no idea.
But you had to be there. So, I mean, a 3 minutes in a gasoline fire shoved underneath a semi-truck.
Yep.
That you had just went face window shield into.
Yes.
How the fuck are you still here?
Because it rose.
And, I mean, so you talked about it for a minute. You know, I wondered, had you ever questioned, you know, what is purpose or what's my purpose?
Well, absolutely, because like I said, you know, why did this happen, one?
Now,
why was I saved?
Did you do that prior?
No. I mean, come on, I was 17 years old. When you're 17, who thinks about that? I mean, you don't have any sense. Touché. You know what I'm saying?
So, you say my point.
Yeah. I mean, you're still thinking about going to second base for a kick. You know what I mean? So, you don't really think about those things, you know?
I was probably standing on third, but.
Yeah, yeah.
Less good. But still, though. So then at 17, though, but now you begin thinking like that.
Mm-hmm.
So what, at 17 now those thoughts of purpose began to flood your mind now?
Well, no. I mean, as you get older, they do. Then I wasn't, you know, thinking about it. I mean, 17, 18, 19, 20, I mean, you're still, you know, I mean, it's, well, why did this happen to me? But I don't think you really dig deep into it. I mean, there, you know, I've come to the conclusion present day that obviously one of my obligations or purposes, I should say, was to bring my three beautiful children into the world. And now since I've gotten to, the dog rescue aspect, saving dogs, I feel like that's a purpose and something that I can do and I want to do and I will do.
And I love that, but let's be honest, this dog to my right that you saved is it's monster.
monster. You say monster and that makes me think of somebody scary.
No, listen.
And he is big and intimidating to you because you're judging the book by its cover, which you should never do.
I would agree, and I've owned pit bulls. I'm a gigantic fan.
Right.
But tell me the story again about the 3 years in the wild where this thing was a Lone Ranger.
Well, I mean, the story is that he was chipped a Lone Ranger. I like that. He was chipped in Canada.
Hold on. If you didn't see the backstage video, I'm telling the people that are going to listen to the podcast, watch the backstage video that I filmed. It's on Twitter and the Facebook page, Adam Lowry. And I do a little shot there, and the size of this dog, you'll hear it. I promise you it's not me breathing like that. If you hear in the microphone this, I don't know, giant, this wolf-like thing. How much does King weigh?
He's probably 110, 115 pounds.
Okay, yeah, with a 10-inch head from one side to the other.
Yeah,
maybe
he's
12.
He's got a big head.
Yeah, so
he's wonderful.
So you were saying, now tell me the story you told me the other night.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, obviously they only know so much on the history of him. What they do know was that he was chipped in Canada, and he did end up somehow here in Florida. It's unknown how, and that he was a stray for several years. I mean, it's fun to think that perhaps he wandered across the border and made it all the way down here. I don't know if that's true or not, but
wait, a dog of this size,
mm-hmm.
from Canada,
mm-hmm.
wanders to Florida,
mm-hmm.
and may have been stray in the wilderness
because people like yourself were afraid to go near him.
Hold on. this wonderful, beautiful animal was stayed alive for 3 years with bears, packs of wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a monster.
he was probably eating the wolves. That's how he got so big. I don't know. No, I mean, I'm just kidding, but.
It's a beautiful dog. I always say that. So look, that's not me breathing like that. And if you ever hear me get weird on the microphone, it's because I'm being lapped, potentially sniffed to be lunch.
It could be your vanilla coffee that's sitting next to you. You know, I think he wants that as well.
Oh, that's right. Which one was, oh, so we got the fire. What am I looking at? So 400 degrees Celsius is what it has to get to burn that.
Through the firewall.
Okay, so that's also going to go through a firewall.
Yeah, the firewall probably, tolerance is probably higher than that. But yeah, I mean, it was serious stuff. It was no joke.
So if the tolerance of the firewall is higher than 400 and it still melted that through the firewall, you had to be in what?
A towering inferno. You know?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I would have ended up charcoal, you know, if Rose hadn't pulled me out, so.
Just so an off duty. It was, and so I heard you say the fireman was actually off duty.
Yes.
Okay, so then never mind. It's not really the response time. It was him running across the street.
What do you mean?
Was he just a nearby passerby?
Yeah, he was a passerby, just like Rose and the rest of the people there. Right. But obviously, I mean, that's his job. That's a 24/7, 365 day job.
What I'm doing is getting the time frame between how long you sat in that fire. So really,
Well, again, this is things that you got to touch on with Rose, or she could give, you know, tell you better, because I don't remember anything except when I woke up in hospital. So in the little bit that I do know, and what I said when she pulled me out is only from what she had shared with me. And we still laugh about today. I mean, come on, oh shit, mom's gonna kill me. She just bought me the truck. I mean, here I'm half dead. I got brain fluid leaking through my nose, and all I'm worried about is the car that mom bought me for the summer. You know what I mean?
I'm sure it's easy to laugh about that now, you know. But in that time, I couldn't have fathomed. I say I've been in some wrecks myself. I have totaled a few vehicles.
Oh, I know that.
In my reckless time of the 20s, but nothing like that, I would say. I mean,
and you wouldn't wish it on anybody, Adam. You wouldn't. It wasn't a nice experience to go through, and but it is what it is. It didn't kill me. It made me a stronger person. I'm here.
How long did it take for you to get there?
I'm still getting there. I think that'll never end, you know?
I mean, does it ever really end with anybody, though?
I don't know. Ask somebody else that's been through that, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, would you still be Johnny, though?
That's hard to say. How do I answer that? Would I still be Johnny if what? Because the only other alternative was I burned in the car.
Right.
You know,
right,
so,
right,
you,
sure.
so. You
or,
know.
Or just forgo the accident altogether.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, the difference is then if I hadn't had the accident, I was in a preparatorial school, I would have completed my, senior year, and then at that point, been pressed to figure out what I wanted to do for a career. What college was I going to go to? But unfortunately, you know, I didn't have those opportunities because I was dealt a different hand. So it changed my life completely. You know, I didn't have those options. I actually attempted to go back to school and finish my senior year, and that was with my jaws wired shut and with a tracheotomy in my throat, and I just couldn't do it. I couldn't cope.
How long? How long were you out of the accident before you tried to go back?
The accident was August, so it was probably close to the end of September. You know, it lasted about 2 weeks. I tried, you know, just it wasn't working, couldn't do it.
Hmm. Would you go back and try to change any of that now? Or would you?
As far as what?
Not being able to finish. Did that help direct you to where you are now?
No, I wouldn't say that. It didn't. And as far as, I mean, going back, if I could turn back the clock, I would wish what happened to me never happened to me.
Yeah. Well, of course.
And I wonder, where would I be today if that hadn't? Who would I be today? But I don't know. I don't know, and it doesn't matter. I mean, it is what it is. I'm happy with who I am, and,
the strength that you show to, you know, to move to that, you know, and I ask that because I've talked to a lot of people and you know, who I work with, you know, about, you know, some traumatic things they faced in their lives and people easily give up, you know, in moments like that.
Well, I think that, you know, like, the first part of accepting, you know, something traumatic has happened to you is being able to talk about it and communicate about it.
When did you first talk about it?
Rose, because of what she did for me, her heroic act, she was nominated for several awards, and then a few networks picked us up, and Oprah, Rosie, and then The View, which was Kelly Regis and I can't remember
the musical chairs.
Uh-huh. We did a couple of shows for that, and you know, it was tough. It was tough for me. I mean, even just you know, if somebody came to the house and talking about it, and you know, even showing footage from any of the TV shows we were on or news clips or whatever was very emotional. I mean, I would say it's taken me to right here, right now, to sit and have a conversation with somebody and not get emotional about it.
And that's 20 years?
22 years.
22 years.
Yeah.
22 years. You fighting that dialogue and that repeat. And the fear of wanting to talk about it. When did you start to realize talking about it helped for you? I mean, I can't imagine going on, well, you're on Oprah, right?
Yes.
I can't imagine, I mean, it's, what, tens of millions of viewers?
Absolutely, yeah. And listen, Oprah's not what she makes herself out to be, okay? She never even spoke to us in the green room, and I don't care who's watching this. I hope everybody sees it. And the only time we communicated was when we were recording live. There was another gentleman, the topic of the show was celebrity heroes. There was a gentleman who I met, which is a fantastic man. His name is Mark Harmon, and he's married to Mindy from Mork and Mindy. Mark Harmon was he had the Chicago Hope show. He was also the teacher in Summer School, the movie.
Yeah.
There was an accident in front of his house in Beverly Hills, burning car, pulled some people from the car. Wonderful man, took the time to speak with me and, you know, my story and everything else. You know, where's Oprah? Nothing. So I don't really think much about Oprah, but, that was even emotional at the time. It was, you know, I was choked up. And as I said, over the years, and even anyone asking me about it or showing them anything from the accident would usually, you know, get pretty upset and break down. But like I said, this is probably the first time I've been able to sit through this and, you know, do something like this. And yeah, I'm okay, which shows I'm at a different stage now, with what has happened to me. So it just, you know, like I say, it never ends. It just keeps getting better and better.
Man, you're brave for even doing it and working it this way and fighting that, man. And for anybody that does listen to this, that, you know, that hears that story, and for any of you that are listening to the story, and, you know, I think maybe you even can, you may inspire that next rose, right? You know, that next person that goes, you know what, if I'm going to be that person that's walking around ready to help, mm-hmm. you know, not ready to kill or beat somebody or make a phone, mm-hmm. you know, rather than this walk around on high alert, but what if we walked around on high alert of help,
mm-hmm.
you know, instead of this high alert of who's that, what's that, mm-hmm. you know, who are you doing, you look suspicious, you know, I hope that inspires more roses. You know, to walk around and maybe if you're the one that witnesses something, witnesses the poor treatment of someone,
mm-hmm.
If they're there, that, you know, be that angel, yeah. be that rose.
Make a difference.
Do that, because, I mean, that's the inspiring part on both of those sides, man. And then to, at 21 years old or at 17 years old, you know, fight against all those pressures that you already feel at that age, you know, and go through some hard physical issues and medical issues and continue to fight that, man. That's why I wanted to talk to you and sit down. And I mean, you know, we're friends way back beforehand, before any of this, man. And I don't even think
you and I have ever even conversated on the details or gone to the depth we have today. So
no, man.
And hopefully we'll follow up with Rose and get her perspective on it as well, because obviously she'll give, you know, a completely different perspective, being, you know, my angel and the one who actually did it and acted without even thinking about it while trying to be held back by a fireman and other people.
Yeah, well, those 3 points about your story that really hit me, you know, that are inspiring, is it begins with the angel Rose, you know, and the irony of the fireman. There's something there. It kind of tells me about our society today, where it's like, we as a group and a society need to be the unsung hero. We need to be the Rose, you know, the unsuspecting hero.
Mm-hmm.
And it teaches that from the beginning, you know, as one. And then your recovery through it and push through to the success that you have today,
mm-hmm.
and what you were able to go through and even accept and find a way to find the silver lining in it. The beauty and inspiration happens to these people and moves people every day. That's why we share those stories. And the other unknown thing about it that many people didn't know, that you mentioned about her husband,
mm-hmm.
that some, you know, 10 years later,
mm-hmm.
her husband, possibly, mm-hmm. who knows, the ideas we really don't know, mm-hmm. may be that pay it forward idea of you help someone and it helps someone else, and maybe it really exists, and it just exists on a different time clock that we can't grasp and understand.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe sometimes we just have to step back and be in awe at, like your story does for me. For me, it just lets me step back and go, that's the human experience, man. And I couldn't love you enough for sharing this shit with me, dude.
It's been great, bro.
I love
appreciate
you.
Appreciate it. I love you, dog.
I appreciate all right. it, man. Good chatting, dude.
Cut. Bam.
Well, hello there, Rosa, an angel from heaven.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. I must be doing something decent because apparently I get to talk to an angel today. So, you know, somebody's letting me in somewhere.
Well, I don't believe I'm an angel. I think I was used.
I don't know. I would argue the fact that I think sometimes angels are commanded and used. So I know one person walking this planet thinks you're an angel.
Ah, thank you. I know. That's John.
Ken, I would just start from the top. We listened to John's reenactment, if you will, of everything had to be retold to him. Can you walk us through, you know, your day, if you will, even the 5 or 10 minutes just before, and just take me there if that's okay with you.
No, that's fine. I was actually going up to that area to pick up my paycheck, and I was doing some show jumping with horses, and I had a competition coming up in about a month. And I ended up going down Jericho Turnpike. There was a place called Hobby Horse there to find a riding jacket. But I still had to wait. So I really didn't know why I was going up there instead of going left to get my paycheck. I'm like, let me just go look at the riding jacket. Last minute decision, made the right turn, and a few lights down there was John, and his Pathfinder was under a tractor trailer. It wasn't even supposed to go that way that day.
No. What took you that way? Just the jacket?
Yeah, and I really didn't need it right away. I wasn't even planning on going to that place to get the jacket that day. I don't know what made me turn right instead of left to go get my paycheck. That was just a few minutes prior to arriving on the accident scene.
Now, how long had the accident had transpired before you saw it?
I was the first car on site. So I had it only be minutes or seconds.
Just right behind it?
Right behind it. There was nobody gathered around. There was no cars. It was the tractor trailer blocking the whole road, and John's underneath it, completely underneath it. And I was the first car there, like, oh, my God, what just happened here?
What did you do? What happened? What did you do?
I got out of the car, and I said, I know I'm not supposed to move any accident victims, so I just went over to the tractor trailer. It was an old man who was walking in circles. I made sure he was okay. He's like, I'm fine. There's somebody in the car underneath the truck. I was like, what? So I go in, I see John in there, and I know not to touch him, because if I do and he has a broken neck or something, I can do more injury. So I was like, okay, somebody's going to drive by. Somebody's going to see this, because I didn't have cell phone back then. Somebody's going to call the police. Let me just stand here. As I'm staying there, people are starting to, like, gather on the roadside, and cars are backed up. And all of a sudden I see, I hear, like, hopping in the engine of his vehicle under the truck. So I kind of bend down and I look and I see crackling and popping, and you can smell like gasoline, and I was like, oh no, what's going on? And then, boosh, fire just erupted like in the engine part that was under the truck. And now there's like maybe 60 people on the roadside, and somebody's yelling out, I'm an off-duty firefighter, get out of there. There's a rupture in the gas tank. It's going to blow. I was like, oh, my God. Nobody's going to. Okay, now I've got to go in there and help him, whether he's got a broken neck or not. I've got to pull him out before this gets worse. I went in the truck to get him, like, crawled in, and I couldn't move him. I could not budge him. It was just from the impact, the steering wheel and everything had him, like, just stuck in there. I get out and I start screaming for, like, the people to help me. I'm like, please, somebody, please help me. I mean, I'm just feeling my veins sticking out. I'm screaming. And that's when the guy said, don't, you know, just to get out of there, it's going to blow up. So I was like, oh, my God, they're not going to help. At that time, I have the newspaper, and the heading of the newspaper says, God help me, I'm going in. I screamed, at that very moment for God to help me get him out. And in my mind, I said, Mom, raise my children if I die. I know my mom will raise my kids. And after I screamed for God's help, I went in a second time. And like a feather, he came out and was like on my lap after screaming for God's help. I was like, okay, that worked. That worked. Okay, now how am I going to lift him? At that time, I was like 128 pounds. I can't lift this guy. And I was like, I was talking to God. And I opened my eyes, and this is on Oprah, and this is on The View, and there was a man. I felt his hands touch my hands under John's legs. And I opened my eyes, and he looked like me with a mustache. I said, thank you so much. We both lifted him together. We ran about 30 feet. We put him down. Both trucks exploded. The trees on both sides were singed. The cement on the bottom of the floors was singed from one side of the road to the other. There's pictures. They have pictures. It was like something out of TV. Then the cop says, do you know what you just did? Do you know what you just did? And I'm like, yeah. I was trying to make a joke. I'm like shaking. I'm like, yeah, I lost my $300 sunglasses. The cop goes, here, you can have mine. I'm like, no, no, no. And John's sitting there, and I got my hand on him. He goes, you just saved somebody's life. I'm like, no, I had help. Where's that guy? He looked like me with a mustache. Wait. And the lady's like, ma'am, nobody was there. I felt his hands. I saw his face. And they said there wasn't anybody there. I don't know. All I know is there's a higher power. And that's the day I connected. I don't go to church on Sundays. I drink alcohol. I smoke cigarettes. And I was like, why me? Why me? I felt like I was chosen. John wasn't supposed to die. I had no fear of dying. None. None. Not 1 ounce. Everything just worked. And I kind of like knew it as I was going in that we were going to be okay. Can't explain it to anybody. But I don't talk about it often because I don't take the glory. And I'm not a holy roller. But I know there's a God. And I know there's angels. And John is here because he's supposed to be here. That's all I can say.
I wish at this time I could come in and be some interviewer that I'm jaw floored. I was there with you as you were walking through this story. I was there with you. And you are, that's amazing to hear something like that. Rosa, and what I found interesting there at the end, you said you were asking the question, why me? And when we talked to Johnny, you know, Johnny, I asked him what his first question was when he woke up from the accident, and it was the exact same question. So he wakes up with, why me, asking a question. You save a life and ask the same question, why me?
Why me? Like, all my friends and coworkers and the doctors and nurse, everybody I work with, they're like, either you're crazy or you're brave. And I tried to tell everybody there was no fear, no. They're like, you could have died for a complete stranger. I never even thought I was going to die. Like, it was just everybody was screaming. And I was just standing there like, okay, how am I going to get this guy out? I'm going to get this guy out. I am not leaving him behind.
So you had total belief. Yet that moment, now you had already went in the first time and failed and came back out, and you're surrounded by 30 people.
At least 60, because on the roadside, because now you got cars blocked on one side and going west and cars blocked going east. So you got people lined up on both sides of the road, and we're like right in the middle. Did John send you a picture?
No.
We got paper clippings and articles of the actual trucks burned. That what's left, what you can see, we have the pictures.
Yeah, send me those. So you got 60 people standing around you, and no one.
And the guy claimed, when I found John, I got a cut, and his blood went into mine. And I said, oh, God, I have two little children. I have to find out if he has any diseases that I can pick up through bloodborne.
Right.
So I started calling all the hospitals to see if I can find, I didn't even know his age. I just said a man. I didn't know he was only 17. And I finally tracked him down, and I went to the hospital, and they're like, that's the young man that was pulled out of the explosion. And there was a woman with red hair, and I go up to her, and I said, are you his mom? She said, yes. I said, I'm Rose. I pulled your son out. She says, that's impossible. Look at you. What are you, 120 pounds? So that man over there, that firefighter, pulled him out. I was like, what?
No.
Oh, I said, I have a cut. I've got his blood on me. They saw me. The police were there. It was me. He never helped me. He never even came over to the truck. She's like, what? And I said, wait 1 minute. And I went over to him. I said, how dare you? How dare you claim to have pulled him out? You didn't even come and help me. How dare you? And he put his head down, and he left. And they mentioned him at three of the honorary dinners. I have like a whole wall of plaques. And his name was brought up at several of them. But he never showed because he was lying. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, he really tried to steal credit for a rescue?
He didn't try. He told his mom in the hospital that he saved him.
That's not trying.
I blew his mother out of the water when I was, no. She goes, how could you? Look how little you are. I'm like, nobody helped me.
And you have 60 witnesses to back that up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then the fact he doesn't even come to any of the award ceremonies. Yes.
Confronted him, he bowed his head and he left, and we never saw him again.
Oh man, I don't want to put his name out there or anything, but he knew. I mean, he should have retired the day that Rosie pulls Johnny. He should have known. Okay, I'm not cut out for this.
I wish he had helped me. You know, it would have saved me screaming. And I mean, actually, he didn't help because I think I needed to connect. Like it was a connection to the higher power. It was the most amazing. It was a miracle.
And you weren't even spiritual at the time. You didn't even live like that.
I was spiritual and I carried God in my heart, but I didn't go to church on Sundays.
Sure, sure.
I went. I'm a Catholic. I have all my, you know, baptized. I have my communion. I have all everything I'm supposed to. But I never went to church on Sundays. But I carried God in my heart. I knew He was real.
The first time you go in and retreat, it's almost as if like you went in, I mean, well, you said, did you just respond out of instinct? Was it just someone has to do something?
I saw the smoke by his feet and the fire, and
I
was like, okay, now the fire is by his feet. I'm trying not to touch him because I didn't want to do any more damage. God forbid he had a broken neck. But once you saw the fire, you know, I saw the fire by his feet and the crackling. I was like, oh, and the guy screaming it was going to blow up. That's when I knew I had to do something, whether his neck was broken or not. I had to get him out of there. He was breathing. He was unconscious, and then he opened one eye because this side was crushed, and he looked at me like with one eye, like begging me. He couldn't move, and I was like, oh, my God, he's awake. Oh, my, he's going to burn to death. I had to.
In the field of psychology, there's this notion of groupthink. You know, that if there's 60 people standing around and no one does anything, no one will do anything. Now, you prove this theory totally wrong, because when the theory also says that if one person reacts to something, and then by groupthink, everyone else should fall in line. And,
no.
You know, I define bravery and courage as those that know what will happen, but they go anyway. And for you, you went the first time to fire, of all things, retreated. And in that moment of groupthink, where you're supposed to be the most susceptible because you're surrounded by 60, where you're just, and a fireman is going, get away, and you heard the crackling of the fuse about to go, and you react to go, I know what's going to happen, but I'm going anyway.
Yeah.
That's the definition of bravery meets miracle meets, I mean, these are the things that I think inspire people to be different. You know, I talked to Johnny yesterday, and there were three points about the way he told it that stuck out that I won't give away. But one of the ones that I wanted to point out was, and the reason I want to echo this story even further is, you know, is if your actions in that moment speaks to a proud principle of the human species, that we will at all costs risk everything for strangers' benefit and life, when we feel that genuineness and that empathy. And I thought, you know, how can we make more Rosies in the street? Imagine us walking the streets instead of going, who's that? What are they doing? How are they doing that? Are they suspicious? Is he looking at me? That if we walked the streets more like Rosie and said, how can I help today? Maybe I could be a miracle. And that's a totally different mindset, walking the street.
That would be a beautiful world.
And then for a moment, it was that world. When you grab Johnny and your decision and the bravery and walking with that, it made that world in one choice.
It did. And when I see his children, it's just another miracle. Every child that he had, like, wow, they wouldn't be here. It's just everything. It's just, sorry.
Now I heard something yesterday that happened September 11th, 2001. That we all know that day that lives in infamy, that happened in your life that obviously Oprah and Barbara and these people could not talk about.
Right.
What happened?
My husband at that time was going towards the buildings, and the vehicle they were in stopped. It just stopped. I don't know what happened. They missed dying by seconds, minutes. It just stopped working. The car that he was in, they would have perished. They were going towards the building. He was an NYPD officer, and his life was spared
by seconds.
Minutes.
Well, think about it. How was Johnny spared by?
Seconds, minutes.
And your husband is saved 8 years later by seconds.
Seconds. Yeah.
By a miracle.
By a miracle. Yes. We're divorced today, though, but at the time, it's still a miracle. My children's dad is still alive.
That's right. The divorce doesn't matter. The fact that he was able to be there as a father.
My children have their dad, and that is a miracle. And he stood there for weeks pulling bodies out and limbs and helping. He's a hero, too. He really is.
Gosh, it gives me so much hope about, you know, the world and the paying it forward. You know, if we all said, walked out of our houses in that morning and said, today I'm going to be a Rosie. And we did that just one day. The miracles that may pay forward 8 years later.
And it's true because, you know, John changed my life too. So many things. Not just living the miracle and knowing there's a God and a higher power and there are angels. His mom gave me an award. I don't know if he wants me to air this or not. But they gave me $50,000 3 years later as an award. I don't know if Johnny wants you to know that, though.
Okay, don't worry. That's here on us. We're not live or anything, so don't worry about what's out there. We can edit. We'll talk to Johnny about that.
They changed my life when they gave me that and got me out of a not-so-great section I was living with my children. We bought a house, and we were robbed four times. And that money, that $50,000, bought this house, put a deposit down on this beautiful house I'm living in for the last 17 years. In safety, I'm safe, I'm out of that area, and it's all because of John and Colette, his wonderful mother. So many things changed in my life because of that one incident. His mom put me in for the Maalox Awards, 1 minute best acting, quick thinking in New York City at the Waldorf Astoria, won another $5,000, and it just, I'm in a book, and it just goes on, and you never think, I just knew I had to do what I had to do, but everything that happened, I'm in Women's World Magazine, I never thought in a million years all these things would happen, so my life has changed completely. I'm now a Reiki master.
Whew. You get me off a cliff over here.
I know. I'm crying too. Oprah Winfrey cries. The whole audience cried. And I told Johnny, if nothing, this story, I save it. And when I see somebody losing hope or faith or depressed or crying, I'm like, I need to tell you something. And I never talk about it because I give all the glory to God or the higher power. But when I see somebody down, I tell them this, and they cry, and they're like, I really needed to hear that. That restores my faith. And so many people have been helped from just this story. If nothing else, it restores people's faith when I tell them.
The ripple effect from when it starts as, you know, sometimes when I want to ruffle feathers, I may start out by saying, look, there are no traumatic events in life. You know, when I talk to people about trying to change their life, it's how we perceive those events.
Right.
And at that moment, obviously what Johnny went through was traumatic. But the ripple effect from one traumatic event and then one person's decision against all odds, the world is like, what are you, don't do that, what are you, crazy? And one decision for life first and dives in creates a ripple effect for your children, your communities, Johnny's children that are now here.
Johnny's mother, who would have lost the only son.
Oh, I mean, add that. I mean, and the ripple effect of them repaying it with you in their kind ways, and the way that just stretched. I mean, who knows who read the book or saw you get the award or saw you on Oprah that walked out and said, today I'm going to be a Rosie. See,
right.
What we can't find here are all the Rosies that went and did a Rosie act after the inspiration from this one traumatic event. I wish we could pull together all of the things, not just the things we see, not just your children, your home, your life, but the people that may listen to this, you know, and hear this story and go, I'm going to be a Rosie today. And and watch those ripples.
It's amazing. And I'm Jenna's godmother, his first baby.
He said that.
Yeah, her godmother. And I'm so honored. And I wish I lived closer. But I carry her in my heart. I see her every day on Facebook. And even that, oh, my God, I'm her godmother, his first child. They talk about tearjerker. That was amazing.
Yeah, but, we were laughing yesterday because we couldn't figure out what the word was. Was it? He goes, well, then I think he said maybe nominate. We're like, did he nominate you? Did he commission you? We couldn't figure out what the word is.
God?
No, when he made you the his godmother.
Oh, yes.
Did he nominate you? Did he commission you? We couldn't figure out the word yesterday.
I think he asked me.
There you go. I'll take it. Yeah, he just asked you. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Rosie, I mean, I wish that I even had a megaphone to the world to I don't know, play this story for people every day that are in the shit and just feel like they're in the darkness and nothing will change. You know, it's why I try to encourage people to say, look, if you're feeling in the dark in your life, go help someone. Go do something.
Do something good.
You know,
and I think also I became a Reiki master just recently. I became a Reiki master, so I do energy healing, hands-on healing. Miracles, like right before my eyes. And I say it's Reiki, but my hands get real hot, and I do a lot of Reiki for people, which helps. The Japanese art of healing, you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
I'm a Reiki master now.
Your hands, your masterful hands pulled him out of a car.
They did. But I think
if
I had
help. If you didn't heal somebody that day with your hands, I don't know what you
But I think I had help.
Well, do you have help now in what you're doing with the Reiki?
Now I'm still working as a nurse with geriatrics, with old people, and I do Reiki on the side. I hate charging a fee, but like children, I do a little girl who couldn't walk. I did Reiki for her. 3 months later, she was walking.
Holy shit.
It's pretty powerful stuff. Yeah.
That's some serious shit, Rosie.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I can give you her name. She was a little dancer. She was 11 years old. I took care of her great-grandmother. And she came down with something and was wheelchair-bound and down to like 60 pounds. medical people couldn't find anything. I'm like, let me just try, Reiki. I know you don't understand it. Just let me try one time. 3 months later, I'm at work getting medicine, and I feel a tug at my shirt, and I turn around, and it's her walking. I was like, I knew it. And the tears start crying. I'm like, I knew it. It's just one thing after another. Ever since John, I've had so many. Another man stopped breathing at a gas station. I started CPR. I had my finger on his pulse. It stopped and instantly started CPR. He's alive today because I was standing behind him to buy a pack of cigarettes, of all things, and started CPR on him, and he's alive today. So, I mean, it's like a rip. It's definitely John was the beginning, but my life has continued on that path.
I'm just going to follow you around forever.
I just ask him if you're going to use me, just guide me and show me what to do. Don't ever put me in a situation where I don't know what to do. And I just kind of go with it.
I don't know. I'm not so sure you had training to remove someone from a blowing up vehicle.
Oh, I work with old people. That's my career. I've been working with old people since I'm 18 years old. So I'm not like an acute care or emergency care nurse. Not at all.
Right. So you have no training. So I mean, no one has no training doing that. And not, I mean, firemen do, and the firemen didn't even do it.
EMTs do, yeah. But they weren't on the scene yet, so.
I'm just going to follow you around for the rest of my life, so in case something happens to me, I got my Rosie.
And I'll follow you around, too.
Angels can do that somehow. You got to let me in on how to do that.
It's all in the heart.
I love that tagline. You know, I would like to create a new tagline out of this, too, if we ever could as a group. And I think it just kind of came naturally, which is be a Rosie. Be a Rosie.
Oh. That's so cute. And John said Rose to Recovery. Is that?
Yeah, that's the name of the episode. That's what we're titling the episode.
John is text messaging me saying that Adam's trying to get a hold of us. I don't know.
We're a hold. Rosie, thank you so much for the inspiration, the talk, the moment, the truth. The open-heartedness, and my hope is that maybe this story continues its ripple effect that it has over the last 30-something years, or yes. The last 20 years. I hope it does that.
Me too. Thank you so much for this interview.
Thank you, Rosie, and I think we may have to do another show with you and Johnny together and talk about just the ripple effects rather than just the accident.
Yeah, that's another whole story.
Yeah, I'd like to follow those ripple effects. Maybe we can do something like that, and let's get on and be totally 100% positive, and maybe we could chase the ripples for a while. Maybe we spend a couple months chasing ripples, and let's see how far we can get the show, and maybe we'll all come back together and see how far your one act and how far that may have gone over the last 20 years.
Wow, that would be huge.
I think we're going to try to do that, you know, and I don't think Ancestry.com is going to help us out.
No.
Rosie, again, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Take care of yourself, all right?
Hey, I want you to check out another podcast that I listen to with two friends of mine. That's my buddy Chris Fisher and his friend Jesse Cage in the FNK podcast. You can catch them at fisherandcage.com, but look them up on iTunes. They're a great podcast. I love listening to the fellas each week, but that's the FNK podcast.